This is The Edge with your hosts, Jonathan Von Tobel.
New hour of The Edge. It is Tim Murray, Wes Reynolds, no JVT. He is working hard on the NBA betting guide. And Wes and I are keeping an eye on a little college hoops. Nothing like a little Monday college basketball action, Wes.
What a way to start off a Monday. The Maui Invitational in Asheville, North Carolina, with Bill Walton on the call. Does it get any better than this?
Jason Benetti, too.
Jason Benetti as well.
Don't shortchange my Carolina League broadcast alum as well. 76-all right now is the score with, 34 seconds to go?
Yes.
And both you and I took Davidson plus the points?
Yes, so we're hoping
no overtime.
Overtime is where underdogs go to die,
yes,
our listeners and viewers well know.
Yeah, Aaron Oster, producer on the network, sitting over on the corner here, texts me over the weekend, you know, angrily that Virginia Tech and Villanova are going to overtime. I got the points! Mm-hmm. Well, they won outright, so it worked out. It worked out for the Hokies, but we'll keep an eye on that, but let's get to the NFL, and every Monday on this show, Wes and JVT always talk to a good friend of mine, George Shahuri from Pro Football Focus. I'll say it once, that's it. I won't say it again, George. How did I do?
Not too bad. I need Bill Walton in here calling some of my last names. That'd be great.
Let's start with tonight. We've got Let Russ Cook going up against this Philadelphia Eagles. You know, my ginger brother Carson Wentz has really let me down this year quite a bit. So you got Seattle getting 6.5 tonight. The public's going to see the candy of under a touchdown and want to grab it. How do you look at this game with a total of 48.5 as well?
Yeah, I think this is a game that if you want to bet just this game and you want to look at the spread, then the value is on Philadelphia. But, you know, all you have to do is open your two eyes and watch Philadelphia play football to realize that you're in for a lot of pain if that's something that you're looking to back. If you believe Jalen Hurts is going to play a lot, then I might be a little more excited about it. The way that I would approach this game, though, is to look at it as the first leg of a teaser. We talked about this on the PF forecast last night. You could tease Seattle down to a half and have that be the first leg, and then look ahead to the week 13 games where there still might be some value. Grab a teaser leg you like. Last week, we talked a lot about the Patriots as a 2.5-point underdog, being able to tease them up to 8.5. Obviously, they ended up winning. But some of those other favorites like Cleveland, you know, you could have teased them out as well, and that would have been one that you would have been able to cover with the teaser, but not against the spread. So I think this is a similar situation. I'm not looking at Carson Wentz as a guy that slays Russell Wilson in an important game for Russ and the Seahawks here. To put it in perspective, Russell Wilson has a better passer rating under pressure than Carson Wentz has when he's in a clean pocket. And I think that about sums up the two seasons these guys are having.
And that's why we may see some Jalen Hurts tonight in Philadelphia, hopefully for me, because I embraced the pain and took the Philadelphia Eagles. I need them to go 5-0 in the Circa Sports Million.
All right.
So I'm going to go at least 4-1, so at least got that going for me. But George, got to talk about tomorrow's game and maybe moreover the general sense of the Steelers, a Shahuri controversy, if you will, as George made the statement that the Pittsburgh Steelers at 10-0, while saying that they were a good team, were a little bit overrated, that they're not as good as what you would see out of an undefeated team like the mid-2000s Colts and the Patriots when they were on their run. And Georgia took some guff from the Twitterverse, but we don't mind that. We take up arms for George Shahuri because I think George, you're absolutely right on this one. We're probably not going to see it come to fruition tomorrow now with all the COVID-19 issues surrounding the game. Steelers, a double-digit favorite, but going forward with the Steelers, I think that there are some spots to go against them, and dare I say, one might be next Sunday with the Washington football team.
Yeah, I think there certainly are, and I think a lot of those spots are going to be in the future, right? Maybe even if you're looking at Kansas City, you know, going back to the Super Bowl, winning the Super Bowl, and people overrating how hard it will be to get past the Steelers, or even just to get home field over the Steelers, and people obviously see that and everyone looks at overrated and thinks you're saying bad. And that's not right. What I'm saying at all. I think they have a chance to win the Super Bowl. But if you look at the top five teams and you have a wide array of fives among people, all five of those teams, depending on who it is, are going to have a quarterback that is playing better than Ben Roethlisberger. Right now, he's got a PFF grade in the low 20s. Even if you think that's low on him, say he's 15. Okay, there are still a lot of quarterbacks playing better than him. And that is one of the most consistent parts of a team, right? The quarterback is the linchpin of how successful you're going to be. While as defense is something that we see fluctuate a lot from week to week. And that is a lot because of who you face. And the Steelers have faced, by our power ratings, the easiest schedule so far. So that doesn't mean that their 10-0 isn't impressive, but it means that there is opportunity to look at where the public and talking heads will look at the record, will see the impressive takeaway numbers, and just immediately put them in the conversation with Kansas City. And to me, that's where the overrating comes from. And I also think it's because there's a lot of parity in the NFL right now. I think after the top team, which is the Chiefs, in my opinion, you can have arguments for a lot of other teams. The one unassailable fact is, in my opinion, and the opinion of our numbers, BFF, that the Chiefs are in a tier of their own. So, you know, people will get angry, and if you're not making people angry, then what the hell are you doing? You're doing something wrong, in my opinion.
And exactly, George. I mean, would any of these people in the Twitterverse or on social media make the Steelers a favorite on a neutral over the Kansas City Chiefs? Absolutely not. And so to your point, you know, like you're saying, overrated doesn't mean bad. You're still like, this is a very good team that's a bona fide Super Bowl contender. But to put them ahead of Kansas City, I think would be ridiculous at this point.
Yeah. And look, if you're going to get some players, and the Steelers players have been vocal on Twitter. I mean, they've been vocal about this upcoming game with the Ravens, what they think about that. And a lot of them had some fun things to say to me. And I think I took it in stride. I changed my Twitter profile bio to computer geek with two exclamation points at Bud Dupree's request. You got to have fun with it, man. If you aren't having fun debating football, then what are you doing over here, right? I just don't get it. So I've had a lot of fun with it. I'm really excited for this game and for what the Steelers are going to do going forward, because I think they get past the Ravens here. But they have a couple hard tests. I mean, the football team is not bad. They still have to play the Colts. And then once they get into the playoffs, I think that's when we'll really see where people truly feel the Steelers belong.
At PFF _ George, computer geek, joining us right now. I'm looking at it right now. It's well played. Well done. We got the news as this show started, George, that San Francisco is going to pack up shop, head to Phoenix. Monday night, they take on the Bills. And I think it was either on your podcast or on this program, or maybe both, you talked about, you know, San Francisco with all the injuries they're dealing with, a little bit of that hangover. Watch for them late in the season. And that bared fruit yesterday. Looked great. Saw Kinlaw return. Saw Richard Sherman back. Mostert. So I'm looking at this spot for San Francisco as a short home dog on Monday night. It's looking kind of appealing to me against Buffalo.
I want to bring up two huge points here. Everyone views this as the 49ers facing adversity. Name me one team that has faced more adversity this season. You cannot. They have faced so many injuries, quarterback, pass rusher, Richard Sherman, the linchpin of that defense. And Kyle Shanahan has, by hook or by crook, figured out a way to make this not just a competitive team, but a winning team. And going to play in Arizona, a warmer climate in the desert, like over San Francisco, that's nothing. Okay. That's not a big deal in my opinion at all for Kyle Shanahan to handle. The bigger thing here is that they're going to get Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk hopefully on the field at the same time. Deebo Samuel was unguardable. And what Shanahan does with those guys who can catch short passes and turn them into long gains, that travels anywhere, and it will travel easily from San Francisco to Arizona. With Richard Sherman back, that defensive backfield is very imposing. I really like the 49ers going down the stretch as a team that's going to play with a lot of motivation to show people that they weren't a fluke last year. They're getting healthier. And look, the step down from Jimmy Garoppolo to Nick Mullins, probably a little over-exaggerated at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, Kinlaw coming back yesterday with the pick six, along with Sherman with the interception and the TFL. So as you get players back, you know, we forget that this team was in the Super Bowl last year. So totally agree with George on that. George, let's move to the AFC South, kind of go two for one here. A switch in division leaders yesterday as the Tennessee Titans lowered the boom on Indianapolis. 45-26, big day for Derrick Henry. Colts without a lot of defenders in the center of that defensive line and in the linebacking core. Tennessee takes advantage, now have a game lead going into week 13 over the Indianapolis Colts. And Tennessee, based on the adjustment adjustments here Monday morning. They're getting a lot of support. They're getting an 8-3 Cleveland team. Somehow this team is 8-3, but you never apologize for wins in this league. Tennessee getting the money so far, up to 5.5.
Yeah, this is one that you could have seen coming, right? I think we're going to enter the week of, is Derrick Henry a bona fide MVP candidate? That's something that you can basically set your calendar to nowadays, and that'll get the public excited. I think they tend to overrate, how much of a rushing force you are and how important that is. And that's been something that you might have been able to fade with Cleveland, before this. But I think right now it's a tough spot for me to buy Tennessee at the top of the market. I bought them last week against a Colts team that I thought was being overrated, that was out without DeForest Buckner. And here's the tough thing about betting against the Cleveland Browns with a Tennessee Titans team that, while they're solid, is not going to shut down, I think, the Cleveland Browns offensive scheme. And so you're betting on Kevin Stefanski to kind of keep that train rolling and keep the game close. That being said, the difference in quarterback play here is massive. So if you think this is going to be a close game down the stretch and it's going to come down to Baker Mayfield having to make a drive, I can see why you would buy the Tennessee Titans here. I would probably wait to see how the line adjusts here. It may become a teasable game if money keeps coming back in on Tennessee. Right now at 5.5, you'd be crossing zero, wouldn't be getting a ton of value. If I were forced to take this number right now, even at a high total, I would probably go with the Cleveland Browns and hold my nose, watch a different game, anything to make sure I didn't have to watch Baker Mayfield in a clutch situation.
And George, flipping to the other side here in the AFC South, Colts at Texans. Colts now 2.5-point favorites on the road. That's pretty much where it opened. It's where it stayed right now. Wouldn't be shocked to see this go to 3, but all of a sudden you got a Houston team that, look, offensively, Deshaun Watson, if he wasn't on a 4-7 team, you'd be talking about, hey, maybe this guy's got MVP numbers, because he's been a do-it-all despite being a little shorthanded with the assisted personnel on offense. We know the defense is obviously very bad if Cam Newton is throwing for about 350 yards on this defense, but they've won 2 in a row now. So I thought a couple weeks ago, maybe this Houston team is going to mail it in. They're going to have a different coach. J.J. Watt's already said that he is likely to be seeking to continue his playing career elsewhere. Obviously, there have been changes really organization-wide with this team, but they haven't mailed it in. They have won 2 in a row, beat New England, then won at Detroit. 2.5 here, I would ordinarily be like, oh, I want to go in on the Colts. They're the better team, but I'm still a little gun-shy getting involved here.
I am too, and this is tricky because I really liked the Texans on Thanksgiving, in large part because you could see it with the Detroit Lions. This was an opportunity to get rid of what they did not want to play for, which was the Patricia regime. And they did a great job of it. I mean, that was a stupendous performance on their part, and it got the job done. But the Colts are a very different team. They love their coach. They're going to play very hard for their coach. And they're a team that I would bet on to bounce back. I think there are two plays in this game. I like the Colts, getting some players back as a short road favorite here. But I also like the Texans with a much better quarterback as a 2.5-point home dog as a teaser possibility, getting them all the way out to 8.5. I think there are some teasable games this week. We talked about the Seahawks tonight. So if you're looking for a second leg to that, you're grabbing the much better quarterback at home, getting points. And that's something that, Christmas is coming. That's what I hope for under the Christmas tree in my house.
Yeah, that's a really nice teaser spot. People always talk about teasing down. If you see 7.5 down to 1.5, but teasing up is just as valuable, especially here, Houston, right? Getting them up to 8.5.
A lot of key number teasable games, as George was referring to on the Week 13 card.
A game that you mentioned, Detroit, and they finally got rid of their coach, and we saw this earlier this year when Atlanta finally fired Dan Quinn. The following week, they beat Minnesota. And now you've got Detroit catching 3.5, 4. This is starting to go down. We're going to talk about games later on in the show, George, about that are intriguing. Chicago laying points right now with that offense. Detroit, after you fire Patricia, it's appealing to me to grab the points with Detroit here at Chicago.
I'm with you. This was another team that I think down the stretch could have some value. I mean, the toxic environment, I don't think can be overstated enough. It just was such a bad situation there. You could see it manifest itself on the field. But I think there is a player on the field that matters even more than Matt Patricia in the locker room, and that's Kenny Golladay. If Kenny Golladay is playing for this team, this offense is a different offense. And Daryl Bevel, who's going to be the interim head coach, is going to leverage that. He takes shots down the football field. When Matt Stafford was really in the zone last year, that's what they did. A ton of play action. He had the deepest average depth of target in the NFL, taking shots from Marvin Jones and Kenny Golladay. And Kenny Golladay was incredible. So I like both of those things coming to a confluence. I mean, you saw the Bears play last night. Mitch Trubisky is a total disaster. I mean, he cannot hit players down the football field. It was getting to the point where Allen Robinson, you could tell anytime he caught the ball, was like expecting to get his head taken off. That's not a situation I want to be involved in. So I would fade the Bears as a team looking kind of like Detroit looked a couple weeks ago with like, hey, this is not working. And if Kenny Golladay's back, I am all in on that.
There was a play action, I think, in the second quarter last night, Wes. And I think it was Eric Eager who tweeted out that might have been the worst throw I've ever seen. He just threw it to nobody, just right down the middle of the field. It was awful. George, you're the opposite of awful, my man. Always appreciate it. And enjoy the week, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys. Always.
Thanks, George.
There he is. Computer geek, George Shahuri, at PFF underscore George. That's Wes Reynolds. I'm Tim Murray. We're sitting in for JVT today. We have a final at the Maui Invitational, and that means we got another game coming up. Indiana and Providence. We'll break that down next. It is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. You know, when you look up at the clock in the studio, it's 11:25 a.m. Now, if you're watching on the East Coast or listening on the East Coast, of course, it's after lunchtime. But it's always nice to get a little extra jingle in your pocket, especially in the holiday season. Davidson comes home. Didn't come home in the first half. That was a push at 4. But at 7.5, they come home. Texas wins it outright 78-76, excuse me. A late bucket on a drive. The over hits. And an exciting start to the Maui Invitational, Wes.
Courtney Ramey with the game winner, 16 seconds left to go. And Texas gets a scare. And look, Texas kind of maybe the under-the-radar team, I think, in the Big 12. Five starters back. Also, the five-star kid locally from Austin, from high school in Austin, Greg Brown. So, look, maybe it was good for them to get their scare here in this first game. They'll face the winner of Indiana-Providence, which is going to tip off in a little over 15 minutes. And now seeing Indiana 2, 1.5, kind of on average, total at 143.5. I'm gonna lean in the under, and I may end up actually playing the under. Indiana does get Joey Brunk back, who is a good defender, not going to give you a lot offensively, but can play defense and get rebounds. I think you're going to start to see some late movement here to the under as well, because these two teams are physical. Now it depends on if the refs let them play. You know, if they call it tight and do all the point of emphasis, freedom of movement stuff that I absolutely hate. I know Jay Billis loves it. I don't. I like to let guys play, especially the big guys. Let them beat and bang a little bit. You know, if it's a physical game and they let them play, then I think this is going to go to the under, and you're starting to see some movement in that direction.
Yeah, we saw Providence similar to Indiana, and I'll lean on you more for Indiana. Take over in their opener against Fairfield. That game was tied late in the first half. Providence ends up blowing them out, winning that game by 41. The biggest guy for me in this spot is David Duke. He's Providence's go-to guy. And, you know, he didn't have a great first game, but the St. Joe's transfer, Jared Bynum, is someone who, for Providence, if you're leaning towards the Friars in this spot, early on, I once again, you know, you and I were talking briefly off air about this one. I lean towards Providence, not a real great hunch on this one, but I lean towards Providence just because I love Ed Cooley. I am all in on Ed Cooley.
He is a very good coach.
Yeah, so
very underrated.
This is. A really even matchup. I lean Providence, even money on the money line, but I wouldn't go nuts. And going back to Davidson real quickly, I mean, it's been a very good past couple of days for the A-10. Mm-hmm. Think about yesterday, Richmond going into Rupp Arena and really, honestly, not even playing that well and blowing out Kentucky. St. Louis beats LSU, holds on as a 2.5-point win, favorite, wins by 4. You know, this is an A-10 conference that I wrote about in our preview, so I know a little bit more about them than most. And they just, it's very veteran, guard-heavy teams. Mm-hmm. Rhode Island, Richmond, Dayton, St. Louis, Davidson to an extent. So early on with a team like Kentucky, who's extremely young, this is the opportunity there for a team like Richmond to win, even without Nick Sherrod, who was a big blow starter coming back towards ACL. But, you know, Richmond, watch out for them. St. Louis, if they could shoot free throws well, watch out for them. And I don't know. I'm not all in on Davidson, but Bob McKillop, one of the better coaches out there.
Yeah, absolutely. He's always run a great motion offense. Near and dear to my heart because I grew up, obviously, watching Coach Knight do the same at Indiana, who will get underway against Providence. And you mentioned Providence, the St. Joe transfer, also Noah Horchler, the transfer from North Florida. Indiana brings quite a bit back. They've got a little bit of depth here. Obviously, Jackson Davis is the showpiece here. Had a double-double in the first game, and learning to finish with both hands now, and also can put the ball on the floor a little bit. But with Indiana, it's going to depend on if they can make shots from three, which they have not done the last couple years. The foul shooting against Tennessee Tech was absolutely abysmal. You can't get away with that today.
Final thought on college hoops. We'll get into college football and some movement that we've seen so far from those opening lines from yesterday. Gonzaga, who might be dealing with some COVID issues. Wow. That's all I could say.
Yeah.
Wow.
There was a reason I think we ranked them number one.
Wow.
Because when you can bring in an impact transfer like Andrew Nembhard, who just got ruled eligible.
Off the bench.
Yeah. Midweek got ruled eligible. His waiver got approved. This was a guy that started 2 years at Florida and played very well in that starting role. And now you can bring him in off the bench. And now Gonzaga, being such a national brand name, to get a five-star kid like Jalen Suggs come in and play right away. I mean, you don't want to say, I usually say it's an overreaction one game, but they are right now, we would be the clear favorite.
And Drew Timmy was supposed to be the breakout guy. Well, 28-25 in your first two games. Not bad. Too shabby. That's Wes Reynolds. I'm Tim Murray sitting in for JVT today. Line movement in college football. We'll discuss those next right here on The Edge.
And we're back with The Edge.
This holiday shopping weekend is the perfect time to sign up for VSiN. New subscribers get 25% off regularly price of the annual all-access membership, plus a $30 credit to the VSiN store. Subscribe today and you'll get our brand new College Hoops Guide, which is overflowing with everything you need for the season. Our daily best bets, email, point spread, weekly, 24/7. Video streaming and a chance to pick up a stylish new VSiN t-shirt, mug, or hat for the holidays. Don't miss this deal. Huge annual savings plus a $30 credit to use at the VSiN store. Sign up today, VSiN.com/subscribe. No JVT this week. He is locked down in the bunker getting you ready for NBA season, which is going to be here, Wes, before you know it.
Yeah, right before Christmas. I think December 23rd. Is that right, Jacob? The 22nd, the opening date for the
not that Jacob
Association. No. Jacob's not a big NBA.
You know what Jacob
fan,
said to
way,
me?
Everybody.
By the way, the producer of this program and my guys in the desert, Jacob Roach. You know what he says? He comes in, you know, he hands us the rundown. He goes, I've been thinking about the Celtics trade exception all weekend long.
He did that last night. I was like, Jacob and JVT are going to do like a half hour segment on this network about bird rights.
I really think about Al Horford. I think Al Horford.
I'm really talking myself in Al Horford right now. I'm really grappling with Al Horford, Harrison Barnes. What if we trade for Beal? Am I ready to part with Jaylen Brown? It's a lot going on.
They were playing with the trade machine all last night.
Yes, the trade exception from the Gordon Hayward deal. I believe the largest trade exception in the history of the NBA, $30+ million. So, yeah, there you go. Danny Ainge, something else to work. You know, all those draft picks that we had always wondered, what is Danny Ainge going to do with them? Or he's just not going to trade them, and he's going to pick mediocre players.
Right. Right. Good on Gordon Hayward, my fellow Brownsburg, Indiana brethren, though, for getting $120 million.
You know what? We're all, at least myself, Matt Humans, we're all dummies because I'm like, $34 million. You've been banged up. You're opting out of $34 million. Well, Michael Jordan said, don't you worry. I got $120 million guaranteed for you.
I always say, it's not what you're worth. It's what you can get.
Absolutely. 100%. Let's get to college football. We started the show with the breaking news, the unfortunate news, that Michael Penix Jr. out for the remainder of the season, a torn ACL for the Hoosiers. This was initially on this line movement document we're going to show here with Wisconsin laying 14. It got down to 10 from the Circa opener, and now we have removed it because of the Michael Penix Jr. news. Real quickly, just your thought, because you know this Indiana football team as well as anybody at the network, if not better. Indiana catching 14 now, pretty, you could find it almost everywhere here in town. What are your thoughts with Indiana now, no Michael Penix Jr. and catching 14?
At 14, it would interest me a little bit in Indiana. One of the things you got to consider with Jack Tuttle. Now, offers and really being heavily pursued and recruited obviously are two different things. But Jack Tuttle did have scholarship offers from USC, Wisconsin, LSU, Alabama. Now, did they really put the full court press on him? No. Maybe at those level of programs, he might have been the backup plan.
Sure.
We know how that works in recruiting, both especially in college football and college basketball. But nevertheless, he was a four-star kid who just had never gotten the chance to play. His father played at Indiana, was a kicker. Tuttle was born in Indianapolis but was raised in Southern California. He just hadn't gotten his opportunity. Now, tall cotton to have your first opportunity be on the road in Madison, right, albeit against no spectators. So nobody jumping around except maybe the Badgers going into the fourth quarter on the field. But at 14, I still think this is a little high. This Indiana defense, I keep saying, okay, I'm waiting for the bottom to drop out. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. And this defense keeps producing.
I agree.
They absolutely dominated Maryland on Saturday.
It's an offense that can move the ball.
Yeah, and I think they got the running game going last week. Now a tougher task against the Badgers, for certain. But the defense has really played well. They force turnovers. They get stops in short yardage situations. You got a Wisconsin team that hadn't played in a couple weeks. And the last time they played, I mean, Graham Mertz, how is his confidence at this point after how they performed at Northwestern against another very good defense? So at 14, it would be the Hoosiers or nothing.
All right, another game, and we've seen a lot of line movement. It opens yesterday afternoon at Circa. Texas Tech laying 31. It's down to 27.5. I don't know, man. I got to play Texas Tech here. Kansas is 1-7 against the spread this year. Let me just read off some of the scores for those of you who don't recall. The fewest amount of points they've allowed this year is 38, and mm-hmm. that was against West Virginia, mm-hmm. who's not a great offense. They have been blown out by everybody. They get destroyed by TCU 59-23. I guess the mindset is, okay, Texas Tech was just there with Oklahoma, comes up short, final game of the year. Maybe they're not all excited to play Kansas. Or they just want to destroy someone. Grabbing points with Kansas is a scary proposition. And now under four touchdowns, when they haven't had a game within four touchdowns since West Virginia, which was 38-17.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I got it. It's Texas Tech or pass here at this
point. Yeah, that would be with me. I've kind of avoided Kansas all year because, remember, they started the year. Now, we didn't know what Coastal Carolina was going to be. 2 years in a row, they get beat at home in Lawrence by Coastal Carolina. One game on this list, if I can throw it out there, of the line moves, and I sent this to Jacob last night. Buffalo at Ohio. Open 7, now currently 13. You and I were both on the over in the Buffalo game. And one of the things I think bettors kind of think is like, okay, if it's running teams, you automatically want to go to the under. Not so with Buffalo and Kent, because Kent likes to run the ball. They also like to run tempo. And then Buffalo can absolutely run the ball against most teams. Patterson, 8 touchdowns.
Ridiculous.
Almost approached the record. I think he was just under 400 yards. But the first running back to have back-to-back 300-yard running game since Ricky Williams back in 1998 in Texas at the FBS level, of course, when he won the Heisman. But now you're seeing everybody kind of sees that story on the national news where it's like, oh, man, this guy ran for 8 touchdowns. And you kind of knew Kent was going to get run on when you watched that game against a very poor Akron team.
They can't stop anybody.
And they couldn't stop him at all. So Buffalo obviously did what they wanted offensively, 70-41 victory over Kent State. But now you get the overreaction. Everybody has seen that story nationally. Patterson, 8 touchdowns. Buffalo scores 70 on Kent. And now that immediately moves to 13. At some point, I would be coming in on Ohio because Ohio is a running team by nature. Coached by Frank Solich. You know, he was from the Tom Osborne School at Nebraska. So they're a little bit more balanced, but he likes to run the ball a little bit more. So I think 13 is very generous for Buffalo to be laying on the road.
It is a lot. I've got a future on Buffalo to win the conference at 3-1, and this is the final test to get through because they have Akron to close out the season. So it does seem like a lot of steam. Oh, by the way, the biggest game of the year. Akron Bowling Green this weekend, Wes. I know you've got your popcorn all ready.
Oh, my God. I've got the beer and the wine on ice. An enjoyable Saturday afternoon.
Two games that are jumping out at me and Wes in the NFL when we come back right here on The Edge. To hire, you need Indeed. Indeed immediately delivers quality candidates from our resume database when you upgrade your job posts. Get started at Indeed.com. Wrapping things up, it is The Edge here on VEASAN. That's Wes Reynolds. He's here every Monday. He'll be here quite a bit this week. Thursday, Friday, JVT, locked down in the lab, getting ready for the NBA season. He and Jacob are going to be, you know, doing conference calls of who's going to be looking the best this year. I'm curious, as we do a quick tangent on NBA, I don't know if Jacob agrees. I'm all in on the Blazers this year. I'm all in.
Rip City.
Not to win a championship, but
they're going to be fun.
Over win totals. They get Robert Covington. If they're healthy, that's the biggest thing. If they could stay healthy, Nurkic, Dame Time, CJ McCollum, Covington, some of those young guys will be coming into their own.
Enes
Kanter comes back in. Simmons, if he can do some things there. What do you think, Jacob? Do you approve of this message?
They're going to be a really fun sixth seed. That is.
I don't care. They can win. If they win, what is their total? 40.5? They can win 41 games in 72-game season.
I think every offseason we kind of overreact to their moves, but like this offseason was nice. But at the end of the day, I just don't think you're going to get anywhere with two small guards as your best players.
Oh, once again, I'm not saying.
Oh, yeah, no,
I'm not winning any championships. And that was the best thing about this offseason or the bubble was, Lakers.
Right.
That's the toughest 8 seed ever.
Right.
And they win the first game. Oh, told you.
Yep.
Told you.
Yep.
Yeah, and then they win 4. Uh-oh, Rockets. Rockets. They're going to do it. They win game 1. What
That's
happens?
That's the thing with the NBA.
Relax.
Usually the chalk is going to prevail in the futures market, even though we take good numbers. Now, Miami got close here for some of the crew here at VEASAN.
Yes, that is true. There were a handful of people who's a Kelly, Amal. There were some others that had that future on the Heat. Okay, this ends the random NBA talk on November 30th. Once again, JVT working hard right now on the NBA betting guide. We've got college basketball underway. Wes's beloved Indiana Hoosiers and their candy striped pants up 6-2 early in and 9-2. Big three right
Archie
there.
Miller is going to need to get this team in the tournament or he might be using Indeed.com.
All right,
it's like, come on now. We're Indiana here. We don't. like to not make the NCAA tournament.
So Wes, we're in a weird situation where we still have two more games in this week of the NFL. Hopefully we get Baltimore Pittsburgh tomorrow, but you guys last night, as you always do on Sunday nights, great show, opening lines. You look at the opening lines for the NFL and the college season. So I know every Monday you and JVT look at some games that are intriguing to you as we spin ahead to week 13. So what is the number one game that jumps out to you that is appealing?
Game number 463, 464, that being an NFC South matchup between the New Orleans Saints and the Atlanta Falcons. Recall 2 weeks ago, Tim, New Orleans did beat Atlanta 24-9. This got bet down to, I think the closing number was around 3.5. That was New Orleans at home in the Superdome. Granted, no spectators, but still one of the best home fields in the National Football League, because it was Taysom Hill getting the start and not Jameis Winston. Because when we thought it was going to be Jameis, yep, I think it settled at around 5, maybe some 4.5. And then it went to Taysom Hill, who Sean Payton, I think it's clear if you followed this team, that's who he wants to take over at the quarterback position.
Still hasn't thrown a touchdown pass, the record.
No, he has not. And that's one of the reasons I'm kind of looking at the Atlanta side here, because they were laying 3.5 at home, and yeah, they did beat Atlanta, so you got to bump it up because they did cover against the team. Then what did they do? They beat the Denver Broncos with a wide receiver playing quarterback that had less than 24 hours notice that he was going to have to be a starting quarterback in week 12 of a National Football League season. So is a 7-point adjustment really worth it here? And look, Atlanta offensively, they weren't super impressive. I don't think it was just that they kicked the Raiders' tail. I think it was that the Raiders turned the ball over 5 right. times as well, and that absolutely helped. So that's what makes me a gun shy from necessarily going all in on the Falcons. But I do think this is a spot. I've been looking for a spot to go against New Orleans. I did it with the 49ers, didn't get there. Breeze got knocked out of the game. Remember that roughing the passer where he lands on the quarterback,
right,
which you're going to do if you sack a quarterback, you're eventually going to land on him. Well, they called it a roughing the passer. That changed the game. 49ers never were able to cover. But I've been looking for a spot to go against New Orleans because I think they're good, but I don't think they're great. I know they're 9-2 leading the NFC, but, you know, with Taysom Hill, I just haven't seen it yet with him. He still hasn't thrown a touchdown. Obviously, the game plan was conservative. They didn't really need to throw the ball down the field when you've got a receiver playing quarterback for the other side. So Atlanta at 3.5 would be my initial look. I think this maybe could go up a little bit too, so you could perhaps wait on the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, and speaking of the Falcons, the situation that they had earlier in the year, you know, we were just waiting mm-hmm. until Dan Quinn got fired. Mm-hmm. He gets fired. They smoke the Vikings.
Yes.
Went 40-23, up 20-0 at the half. And that's where I fall into the most intriguing game to me of the weekend. Right there at the top of the rotation, 451, 452. I'm grabbing the Detroit Lions plus some points on the road at Chicago. Chicago has now dropped 5 straight games. I believe they're the first team since 1967 to start 5-1 and then lose 5 consecutive games. Let me get that stat pulled up. I favored it last night. They're the second team in NFL history, Wes, to lose 5 in a row immediately after winning at least 5 of their first 6 games, joining the 1967 49ers. They've got a good defense, but got a bit exposed last night. Aaron Rodgers was able to do whatever he wanted. Now, Matt Stafford and that offense is not what the Green Bay Packers are, but I do think it is a toxic environment there with Matt Patricia, and the Bears laying north of a field goal with this offense right now.
Yeah.
It is hard for me to envision. So I think that it'll be some a breath of fresh air now that Patricia is gone. Darrell Bevell will be the man calling the plays. He'll be the head coach, the acting head coach. And if Kenny Golladay can get back, I like the Lions in this spot. I know they got shredded on Thanksgiving, but look, Watson's doing that to a lot of teams.
Mm-hmm.
Mitch Trubisky's not doing that to a lot of teams.
Right.
So at four, you see five there. I think it's gone down to four. Wes, I like the Lions catching points at the Bears on Sunday.
Now, has Detroit had the mimosa party that they had the year before when the season was over and they knew they had a few months away from Matt Patricia? now they're permanently done with them. So maybe they've had the mimosa party and will be sober enough to go with Chicago. But look, I'm not against you here. I can't lay points with the Bears. I mean, it really doesn't matter who the quarterback is. The offensive line is still terrible and very banged up in Chicago. So it's almost absurd that the Bears yet are only one game out of the playoff chance.
It is wild.
Because now you have that additional wild card spot where you're going to get seven playoff teams in each conference instead of six. So, yeah, I'd be with you on the Lions. I mean, you know, I always didn't say sometimes you got to go where the stink is, but you got two stinks to choose from here, and I would take the stink that's getting the points rather than laying
that's
the
right.
points.
That's right. Who's going to be racing the lay points with the Chicago Bears after what we've seen offensively? All right. Second game that jumps off the page to you.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to one that we referred to earlier in the program, and that's Buffalo and San Francisco. And one thing I do also want to add to that in terms of the regulations and laws now in Santa Clara County, it looks like Stanford is going to be moving their operations to the Pacific Northwest, no specific city given, but they are, of course, are in Santa Clara County, as is San Jose State,
yep.
who is supposed to host the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors this Saturday. So keep an eye on that. I think the price is already indicated, and you still may get some bettors betting Buffalo now that the news comes out. Oh, gosh, San Francisco's essentially got to move and have a home game as a neutral game. I think that's already priced in the line here if you're getting three. I'd like to see if I can get more. I don't think I'm going to be able to, but even at three, I still like the Niners here. I think that they are starting to come together, and I'm with George Shahori, who was our guest at the top of the hour from Pro Football Focus, and they're starting to get some pieces back. They're starting to get some personnel back, coming together. You know, the Super Bowl hangover, I do buy into that theory. It's very real, especially early in the season, and you really saw that materialize for the 49ers. But they've had so much adversity. Now they're only a game out of the wild card spot. They're 5-6. They're still breathing. And I think you got a Buffalo team that's got some question marks, despite the fact that they lead the AFC East and look like they're obviously the odds-on favorite to kind of wrestle that king of the AFC East moniker away from the Patriots, who have had it seemingly for about two decades. So Buffalo had problems turning the ball over yesterday. Allen with two turnovers, Singletary with the fumble. I'm just not a buyer yet on this Buffalo team, and San Francisco getting points at home. I think you're getting the team playing the better football right now, getting points.
Yeah, they're getting healthy, and I hope the narrative of, oh, they got to move and go to Arizona, that's going to motivate them. Mm-hmm. As much as it's going to be an inconvenience, mm-hmm. they're going to be motivated. We saw it last night with Kyle Shanahan, with Raheem Mostert getting emotional. I mean, they're upset, and I think that's going to play into it. And I hope this gets the three, because I think this is a spot where I would grab San Francisco.
Still a couple threes out there, but juice to the 49ers side. Mostly 2.5. Obviously at 2.5, juiced more toward the favorite at $1.20, $1.25.
Final one that's a little intriguing to me. I just think it's too many points for Miami to be laying at home. 11.5 against Cincinnati, who, once again, I mean, they kept it close against the Giants. That was a massive public play yesterday. Mm-hmm. The Giants laying 6 on the road. It's a lot of points. I'm not saying I'm playing it yet, but this one was appealing. I'll see how the week goes, but a lot of points for the Dolphins to be laying. They're a good team. They're a solid team, but it's a lot of points for the Dolphins to be laying against Cincinnati.
Do you see? I don't see, and I don't think the market has indicated that there's really that much of a difference between Fitzmagic and Tua here.
Yeah.
You didn't really see it yesterday. I think, you know, Fitz is the more proven guy, obviously, as you're making a run toward the playoffs, and Miami would certainly be there. But yeah, a lot of points for me. This is probably going to be a stay away game for me, though.
Yeah, I'll keep looking as the week goes on, but I really like the Lions in that spot against the Bears. Quick update on Wes's beloved Hoosiers. Indiana up 15-7 over Providence with just under 12 to go in the first half. That's Wes Reynolds. I'm Tim Murray in for JVT today. Betting Across America coming up next. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.